old Dan Bilday.
This is October the 31st, 1994, at the New Red Robin on the Kentucky side, Pike County, Kentucky, with Charlie Blevins. Going to talk about the old coal camps and what it was like living around here in borderland Kentucky and on the West Virginia side also. He's going to play a tune, and then we're going to go into an interview about the coal mining thing.
Till the blood in your veins runs as black as a coal. It's dark as a dungeon and damp as a dew, for the dangers are double and the pleasures are few. For the rain never falls and the sun never shines. It's dark as a dungeon way down in that old mine. On his dope, a drunkard on his wine, a man have a lust and a lure for that mine. It's dark as a dungeon and damp as a dew, for the dangers are double and the pleasures are few, for the rain never falls and the sun never shines. It's dark as a dungeon way down in that old mine. Them old miners, that's a digging my bone. Dark as a dungeon and damp as a dew, for the dangers are double and the pleasures are few. For the rain never falls and the sun never shines. It's dark as a dungeon way down in that old mine.
Well, Charlie, why don't you tell me about what it was like living here in Southern Appalachia in the coal fields growing up around borderland West Virginia?
Well, at that time, I guess it's a pretty rough for a time there, but we didn't pay it much thanks to it because everybody in the same boat there. Everybody just about alike, I guess. And a little rough for them days there. You look back on you call it rough at that time where we had a pretty well good time. Everybody seemed like he enjoyed herself, and mine didn't run that much back then because back in the 30s, I think that's that depression is still going on in, and maybe sometimes I never did know run over 3 days a week, and sometimes I just work one there, and you just had to do what you could do, and you just had to make your living on the side, make your ends meet, and we'd raise these old hillside and things there, and we had our own stock, our cows and chickens and horses. Well, not hauling an old plow mule or something or other, if you're fortunate there, you know. And raising their own meat and preserving their own stuff, things there to eat and so on. But boy, it's a little rough in these coal fields there. But now the people had to dig in and get it there. And the ones that would go out to bat for herself, it wasn't too bad. We thought we was rich. We didn't even know we was poor. And there wasn't no monetary value back in the day, no money. But on the outside of that, we made it pretty good. Made ends meet.
Did your grandfather work in the coal mine also?
Well, I don't think he worked that much in the mine. I really couldn't know my grandfather. He died in about 1929, about 4 years old. He went to the railroad. Now, he worked some of mine, but my dad was a real miner. He went to work in mine, and he's 15-year-old. Right back here in this old Thacker seam right up on this point where we're from, and sitting here. Yeah, he went trapping back there. What that trapping is now, a lot of people don't know what trapping means, but what that is, a trap door in a mine, that's the way you have your ventilation in the face or your cooler. You had a trapper boy, he'd keep that door shut when your electric locomotive went through for a string of cars or something, take a man to be loaded, or when you come back out with them loaded there, he'd have shut that door as quick as that motor and a trip got through there. What you call a trip is a trip of car. And just quick, you come back out loaded there, then you'd have shut again. It kept that air up in the face for the men up there working at what you got, what really called a trap door. You trapped the air up in the face where they had the ventilation stuff going up to it there to get the men up there where they worked.
Yeah. So, when was Borderland Coal Company started, as far as you know, your recollection?
Well, before I can run the history back right there, it started right after the turn of the century there. And here at the head number two, where we're sitting right now, number two Borderland, it was old Borderland Coal Corporation back in that day. And the number one up above us here, about a mile there, really had to get these here miners to close together. It was their power back in them days because they couldn't get too far away from a power station, and they generated their own power and things that they couldn't move up like they do today, where they drill holes down through the mountain, put a rectifier and so on and so forth, and get right at you see. And they generated their own power back in. They couldn't defend, well, which there wasn't no way you see through here at that time. Even down to your company houses, some of them had this DC juice and burning damn lights. You couldn't use no kind of appliances or nothing on them, or you had to heat your home with the coal, and the company brought your coal in. You got your, they charge you a little payroll for it there, and they'd haul your coal in for you. And if you didn't get it, we'd get it out of the river, we'd get it somewhere or another. Well, I never did go to nobody's room frozen to the other start of this.
Yeah. How about the union that during that time period?
Well, at my time, you see, up till the 1933, when we got organized in here, they tried and tried to organize. But now back before that, I remember, but there was nothing there until they didn't get organized. They done this like you see this Make Mom Masquerade here, see that film where they done us the hus just like you done that, but done my dad the same way. When they tried to join you, they shackrafted him out of his camp, which called shackrafting. That's there when you got to get your belongings to go, because most time they'd sell them out in the road there, just right there. And then right there they sat, and well, the union see what was taking place, and they set these tent colonies and things up for these miners to live in. There's one set down here at Nolan, one up here at Goodman, up here at Chatterer, right above Chatterer here on the West Virginia side, down here at Nolan on the West Virginia side. Lick Creek up here above Winkton had one set there. Well, they were out on the Make One, that thing going on there on in that Make One Masquerade, so on and so forth. And they set my dad out, and that was all tough. And see, I had a sister born there in 1919. She lived to be a year old, and she died in that tent. He stayed in the tent for about 3 years. And my last sister was born there in 1921. He was still there, and she's still surviving. Yeah, she lived down in Virginia Beach, Virginia. See, these thugs, what you call thugs, that there are people that work for the company, and they work in the union. And well, you see it on this here Make One Masquerade, when a button sang with a bunch of thugs, they moved in and tried to break it in. And so if they come through and slit your tent in the dead of winter, you had nothing to heat that tent with, just no burnings out of heat and stuff. And they slit that tent, let that cold air blow down on your babies and thing. That there's what killed my sister there. People today wonder why such a strong for the union there. Well, that's one of the reasons, and a lot of people don't realize what went in on and never come through that day and period of time, which I wasn't around that time, but I got in on the tail end of that. I was born in 25, and I remember back there, 3 or 4 year old, I remember stuff that happened similar to that, and they couldn't do a bit of good until President Roosevelt was elected there in 1932. And he passed that NRA Act, National Cover Act, and that gave him the right to organize there then. John L. Lewis was president of the United Mine Workers. He had been for a while there, but we couldn't get organized down this field. He passed that. And my dad and bunch more from the borderlands. See, I believe it's Jack Primore and Bill Elton, a bunch of them are these acquaintances there. And they try to get their charter there. And my daddy, he seen that Tony Elton there. He was a field representative out of Charleston there. Then like that Bill Blizzard, Kennedy, and all them there at the time there. So Bill was a big main lineman district 17. So old man recognized this year Tony Elton there. He's boy. He said, "Hey, make bed here today. Did I see a man over there, Tony Elton?" He said, "Well, we know my dad. You know, the old man been trying to organize this way back in the teens there when it's the trying to organize, because that's where my sister born, 1919. So he there read Blevin, and the old man went over. He read it. He said, "You always want to join a union down at Borderlands?" Old man, "Way I feel there, Tony." He said, "I'd to join the Salvation Army." He said, "Yeah, well, we got a charter for you." So he said, "Well, I'd be glad to get it there." He said, "I'll take it down and get it started." Well, that time, early Hiller Union, meeting right up there where your grandpa Bill Collier used to live at, that little hurricane schoolhouse right there where the Hiller, that was our community building all them days. The Hiller Union meetings there. So the old man, this Bill Elkin and Jack Primo, and I forget who the other fellow was, they're all charter members. I get a hold of that old charter, and I ain't got that charter. But anyway, it don't matter. We were just telling about it there. And the old man, they brought the charter down, and he fellas, then that old county road went down in around the curve right by that schoolhouse there. Then he said, "A lot of little Fraser jobs that they hang back and look around that curve. They had quite a few in there, they signed it and initiating them out of the union, so on and so forth." Old man, he stuck his head around that curve. "That boss, come on in here, we organized a union here today." But some of them said, "A little far," said, "we ain't got no damn job." "No, I live them far." That old man said, "Finally got enough in there to get them organized there, and they got it started there. They ain't got the union organized." And I kind of questioned him, like you're talking to me, and I interviewed him. I said, "Pap, how long was it before you could tell the difference that you organized that union there?" He said, "Charlie, you can tell the difference in 30 days. That's what's the biggest difference you noticed there." He said, "Well," he said, "first thing we done," he said, "we put a union man with that third company check weapon." He said, "That's probably the man lost out at." He said, "He loaded all that tonnage there, and it's your company man. He cheated them out of their tonnage yet. Dock, what you call docking right there. And it'd be, even if they dock you under a rock or a slate or something, and even if you had the tonnage up there, you hadn't clean told this yet when they waited, they wouldn't give you tonnage. And they just made a cornbread living this part of it. But even we got to get something for a wage," he said. "We got where we even draw a payday," he said. "And that way," he said, I ain't knocking a company store, I was trading a company store. They was a little higher, but I'll probably had first class to. And they had name brand stuff. And I know a lot of people, now don't get me wrong, now I'm not knocking nobody, but a lot of people there, they're just like a lot of people today. They couldn't raise their family, they hadn't been for a company store, because if they'd all the money, they would, a lot of them would waste it, went on. And which they had script, and they just draw so much, what time they had off, and then they went down to the books everything. Because now I know from experience, I still see them work today. But now the company store, I wouldn't knock it there, because which a lot of these here people, they resent it because the price is high. The other price is high, but they had first class stuff. Whenever you bought a pair of shoes, you got a pair of shoes. And you got a can of canned stuff, you didn't get no off brand. And if you bought a steak there, back in them days, they kept it back there and they kept it on ice. If you can afford a steak, they go back there and cut you a big steak or a big cut of meat. And man, that tasted like meat. And it wasn't no second class stuff, but it was pretty rough on the old boys because the stuff was pretty high. But anyway, what I'm getting at, he got down where he could draw a payday. And then when then, you see, he'd go up here to Piggy Wiggly's or A&P or whatever. They had these here small back, wasn't nothing like it is today. But you'd walk in and get what you want, see. And you might get, sold him a big volume. You'd get about a half price what you paid the company store for it there. But just like I said, when you bought the company store, you got first class then.
About the bridges here, the dredge line, prior to the dredge line going in, what year was those bridges constructed?
You mean
the one that sits behind the pillars behind
right,
New Place?
Right behind here where these piers sit?
Right.
That bridge went in there about the turn of the century there. I got some pictures of this bridge out here. They first put this in out here. There was this bridge come across and went all the way to the top of this mountain here. They had a stone powder house set right where this road goes through, where the old county road went through here, set right over here. And that burnt there in 1916. I didn't know that until I got a hold of them pictures there. The guy from my college up in Virginia brought them pictures down. No, he was Jesse brought them pictures. That guy brought some more. And I got a copy of it. So I asked my dad, I said, Well, you was working there at that time. I said, I didn't know. Yeah, you did burn, Charlie. He said, 1916. I said, how come it's burning? He said, Cole worked at that powerhouse on the west Virginia side. I said, I didn't think metal burned. He said, it wasn't metal. He said, first went up there, it went up out in Georgie Pine. He said, that big old, said, them the nicest timbers you ever seen there. And he said, they built it back out of metal now. I said, yeah, I remember. They shut it off in the piers there in 1935. We lived up on Hurricane Creek where your grandpa lived there then when they shut it off. We all come down to watch them shoot it up. But anyway, Tim, that bridge there, I believe, as well as I remember, it went in, like I said, I can't remember back that far. I remember my dad saying, right after the turn of the century, I said, it went in there between 1900. And I know this place here, I heard him say, it's in operation 1907, which he just, that about the time he come in this country here, they come in here from Johnson County, they rode in here and settled in. Well, didn't ride in now. He walked in, drove a milk cow in. They settled down here, big splint first, that's right, blowing over there. And they had tent colonies set up there too, but not at that time, because these mines had just getting started. See, the railroad come through here in 92. And after the railroad come through, they were already working on this mine here. The railroad got here. And I've read a lot of history on it. They say they got most of their experienced miners in here. About the first mine that opened this territory was over here at Peach Orchard. That's in Lawrence County, up there, next to Martin County. And most of them Peach Orchard miners come up in this territory here. The old man used to run the Danky up there to locate that little steam engine to pull that coal out of Hurricane Creek there. You probably remember that old tram road come around the mountain there, Hurricane Creek there, where the old steam engine comes through?
Yeah, sure
well,
do.
All right. Well, old man Bill Rusky, he come up here from Peach Orchard there. When he come up here run that little steam engine up there to pull that coal down. I got a picture of the old boy right in the back of here, a guy painted there, the little Danky kind. They come right out of Hurricane Creek, come right through the old Holy Alley dip right in through there, right on up the head of Hurricane Creek, up to where you cross over into Burkett Branch there. Brought that whimpering seam of coal out of there. It was something else there to watch you pull that string of coal out. See, at that time, see, they could have mined that coal out then. It hadn't been for the steam engine in. And you talk about a trick here. Now, I watched that, Tim. They brought that in here back in the 30s. I said it was around about 36 they brought that steam engine in here, 35, 36. And they brought that through the river up here, up where the number one bridge they just dismantled up there. And they brought it through the river. I wonder how they're going to do that. That old man Morris there, they bought the Borderland Coal Corporation out, him and Lackey there, and they went in partner there then. With Morris finally dissolved partnership, and Lackey took over. But anyway, he was still general manager, and he was a genius, a lot of stuff like that there on the managing there. And they brought that their engine in here. They cut a road down that river and laid a track. They laid that track down, laid the track right through the river over to the Kentucky side. And so they laid that track through and up the hill there, up the old county road. So I was wondering how they're going to get her through there if they can't lay down any hill, that thing run. This sheriff fella run this sheriff's Miley engine, the big steam engine on the railroad. He come down and said he put these cars in there. And they hooked the steel cable that their big Miley and hooked it at their little engine, our Shea engine, our Danky. And they let that down to the river there. And this was let that thing just back off and just let the engine go right on that seat and down this purge everything. And they got it, then I took that over to the Kentucky side, that some piece of mail, I guess, over anchor pretty close to that bridge, and they put a shiv. Now, a shiv is what you pull a cable or rope through, just like a round wheel. And they put that cable through that and took it right back to that Miley there then, and pulled that thing across the river and up that hill. That there Miley just backed off and right up through there he come. And just pretty you everything. And that's the way they got it on that, got it over, got it up that hill. They laid tracks up that hill and they pulled it right on up our cable. It took them a little while to do it, by the way, they got it there. Now them guys back in their days there with what they had to do with, they was genius at there. And if you just slow down long enough to watch them, you pick up what to do. The same thing we got right today at they've capitalized on the stuff that them old timers had back in, and they just make it more modern, just like they put more mechanics to it, more hydraulic, and more power, and you know, we can work at this, and now this to come up with it, I'll just patent a little better, because they have more better to do it.
Yeah. Do you have any more coal mining songs that you'd like to share with me here?
Yeah, I could sing you a few there. I got an old coal mining song here. I was raising these old coal camps here at number 2 Borderland. Well, around this area on the West Virginia, Kentucky side, both coal camps on both sides. As I come up through this camp here, I noticed a lot of stuff went on, and we had one in every coal camp there. We had a, what you call your coal camp preacher there. They'd preach in these community buildings, in these schoolhouses, any place you got a place to preach your gospel. And I kind of followed these fellas through, and my life had been fuller than only a dedicated man to religion. And this here's Preacher Lane there. Danger of his labor underground. That Sunday at the meeting place, all the mining family came just to hear the gospel message preached by Preacher Lane. Didn't preach for money, earthly gain, not his lot. Leading sinner to the altar, the only pay God. When it counts a blessing, and he brought a fellow man, Preacher Lane left a mansion in that glory land. Pain. Through the midst of all his misery, he called on Preacher Lane. Who dumb and ill beside him, God hear his prayer. Great peace fall upon the injured miner there. Didn't preach for money, earthly gain, not his lot. Leading sinner to the altar, the only pay God. When he counts the blessing, and he brought a fellow man, Preacher Lane left a mansion in that glory land. Savior, he walked upon the sea. Yes, the Son of God who died upon the cross of Calvary. Told by a miner till life on earth was o'er, in inner peace eternal on that golden shore. Didn't preach for money, earthly gain, not his lot. Leading sinner to the altar, the only pay God. When the counts a blessing, he brought a fellow man, Preacher Lane left a mansion in that glory land.
Charlie, how about them old good old miner strawberries?
Oh, well. Yeah, now the boy grew up, we'd raid his old coal camps. There we'd eat them any place, them miner strawberries. They wasn't more, nothing more delicious or delicate or capable of holding body and soul together. And a good old plate of them miner strawberries. I know I've eat a many a plate of them. Pappy was rich but not famous. My mama was pretty but plain. I really thought that my parents ought to make them old miner strawberries my middle name. Them good old miner strawberries, the best that ever you seen. I was 20-year-old before I was told them old miner strawberries ain't nothing but beans. When we bathe once a week using lye soap and a number three galvanized tub, we sit down to eat with a patch on our seat with a bowl of them good old miner strawberries for grub. Them good old miner strawberries, the best that ever you seen. I was 20-year-old before I was told them old miner strawberries ain't nothing but beans. Mama was a queen in the kitchen. Often I'd hear her say,
that having good health is better than well. So we eat them old miner strawberries 3 times a day. Mmm, them good old miner strawberries, the best I'd ever you seen. I was 20-year-old before I was told them old miner strawberries ain't nothing but beans. You can bake them, you can burn them, you can brown them. I'll cook them for her in a pot. You can serve them up cold or weak or too old. If you're hungry enough, they damn sure hit that pot. Mmm, them good old miner strawberries, the best I'd ever you seen. I was 20-year-old before I was told them old miner strawberries ain't nothing but beans. A lot of boys grew up to manhood as I did in found. He was darn lucky growing up in Kentucky. Have them good old miner strawberries around. Mmm, them good old miner strawberries, the best I'd ever you seen. I was 20-year-old before I was told them old miner strawberries ain't nothing but beans. Just plain old pinto soup beans, piece of cornbread and a big old one. You can't beat them, buddy. This song here was an organizing song there, which has actually happened there. They take you down into Harlan County, Kentucky, and in these days there, they call it Bloody Harlan. And these there boys down here in Harlan County, they vowed to be organized. United Mine Workers of America give their life and a try. Now, you pass through these laurel-covered mountains today and look them over, you wouldn't realize that the gory battle that took place through these mountains here to look at them. And these boys here, they stayed right in the act all the way Harlan County did there, and brought the rest of the county then with them. I guess at that time in Kentucky, Harlan was about you strong. So dedicate this all the old boys to Kentucky through all your county, Pike, Floyd, Martin, all the rest. From Pike, the famous all the feuding between the Hatfield and the McCoys, a fighting for the Union was the Harlan County boy. The miners come from Perry County, some a come from Boyd, some a come from Letcher, and some a come from Lloyd. A lot of them a come from Breathitt, and they made a lot of noise, but the fighting is not the Union, baby, the Harlan County boy. Low. Too many people starving, the summer work is slow. I take my union men to all their grief and joy. Oh, we must have been mighty proud of the Harlan County Bowl. The miners come from Perry County, some a come from Boyd, some a come from Letcher, and some a come from Lloyd. A lot of them a come from Breathitt, and they made a lot of noise. But the fighting is not the union man with the Harlan County Bowl. Fought to make a miner more than just a bunch of slaves. Couldn't buy a wife a dress or buy a children a toy. Oh, we owe a heck of a lot to the Harlan County boy. The miners come from Perry County, some a come from Boyd, some a come from Letcher, and some a come from Floyd. A lot of them a come from Breathitt, and they made a lot of noise. But the fighting is not the union, man, with the Harlan County boy. Jeffrey, I can run a GE too. If I can't get a Jeffrey, that old doodle bug will do. Tipple, ain't gonna load no coal. I'm gonna sit upon the bumper, watch that mean old Jeffrey roll. I'll roll her down, boy. Tipple, boys ain't gonna lay no track. I'm gonna sit upon the bumper, watching old Jeffrey ball the jack. I'll drop that sand, man, that'll roll on down the line. Now watch her go. Oh, I can't get my Jeffrey, Lord, that old doodlebug will do. That old Jeffrey motor.
So, Charlie, how did you come about picking up that song?
Well, I had an old friend there, Tim Hayes. I took interest in it about like you took interest in me there. He's an old-time musician there. And that old rackle, he'd play an old banjo, guitar, mandolin. He'd put on these shows, run these schools and things. And he just comically be a good-hearted old gentleman there by the name of Fonso Chiller there. And he wrote that song there. See, that Jeffrey was your mainline equipment and mine back in them days. You had your Jeffrey loaders and your Jeffrey motor. That Jeffrey motor or something else, boy, didn't come out. That doodlebug, Tim, that little old motor there, got doggy, just a little rackler. I'll tell you where he got one of them. If we ever go over, I'll show it to you. We're this Chief Logan Park. He got one on display there. He just a little old rattler, but whenever that GE come out and had that reel and everything on the top there, take that cable up and roll it over, that was something else. That was a hot rod. Man, they drop that sand. They really, that motor really enjoyed it. And Fonso, he worked some of the mines there, and he'd run them motors there. And he wrote that song there. I think that Jeffrey Equipment Company there, I know you're familiar with, you work around a lot of his equipment and stuff, right, Jeffrey Equipment, and I think they want to give him a contract on after that song that he wrote. I don't know if he ever done any good or not. He did like everybody else in here. He just enjoyed doing what he done. He played for his schools and social and so on and so forth. But back in them days, we really enjoyed him. He was our mainline musician there.
As far as the music in the coal camps, Did people ever get together and have little hoedown type things in the coal camps?
Yes, sir, they did. They get together and they'd have your house parties and things, like somebody'd have a birthday or a wedding or this social gathering. Yes, sir, they would. And they had some, today, you know, with the Holly Pickers and things, they'll get together and play. They'd done the same thing back then. If somebody just had an old banjo or something, but now just like you said, they had some pretty good musicians through these coal camps. We had a mandolin player, he got killed in his mines up here. He's the only fella I know got killed. His name was Burley Adams, he used to live right up the upper end. He's real good there. And Burley, he played, and he had a fiddle player, I forget what his name was there.
Could it have been Charlie Newcomb?
No, I've heard of him, but I never did hear him play. And we had a fella here that was pretty good on the guitar by the name of Luther Evans, and had a fella pretty good on the banjo by the name of Harold Croft, and they'd get together and play. My brother, Glenn, used to play a high moniker with my oldest brother there. He was pretty good on a high moniker there. And he never was much on a string in him. He was left-handed. He could play some, but not that good. He was left-handed there. But they'd get together and do that, and they'd have some of the best time there was. And on the 4th of July or Labor Day or something, they get together around East Park. And I can remember up here at West Williams, you know where it is. It's very thickly populated now. Back in them days, Tim, there wasn't a house in there nowhere. There's no log cabins that right in the end of the field there where that their ballpark is right now. And out in that bottom, there wasn't a house there. And they'd have their gatherings there, you know, like a, and these musicians gathering on Labor Day for the miners on the 4th of July. And they'd have, you know, just like you do today together and just enjoy themselves there. Yes, I can remember that. Have a greasy pig race, you know, when you catch that old greasy pig and climb that greasy pole. I've tried that a few times. You don't get very, very. I even put sand in my pocket to try to climb it. I got almost the top of it and run out of sand.
Now we've talked about the coal mining. Now I want to get kind of into the logging. What do you know about the logging in this area? About who the first pioneers that started to log?
Well, now, your pioneers there was Nelco right there. Was a stand right over here at Miller Creek. Now, a lot of people know that's right on the map is Nelco. They don't know what that Nelco stands for. Nelco, N-E-L-C-O, stands for Northeast Lumber Company. And they, I guess, about the first one in here on Miller Creek over here that started logging in there. And Wolf Creek, I don't know what company it was, but now they logged that creek there. And they had the timber down there at that time. It was so big that they couldn't snake them out there. They'd have to take and dynamite them timbers there to bust them up there before they, you know what I mean? They know where to shoot them at, keep them strong or timber. But they so big, they couldn't do nothing with them. That's virgin timber there at the time. And I remember, Tim, the creek that we lived on up there where your grandpa lived there at the mouth of Harrington Creek, that back in the 30s. Now, you take up in the head of that holler right there, up past Thomas Alley there. You know where Tom's old place was up in the, he was all on his gap. That was virgin timber in there. And there was a feller come in there, and, well, which now he owned a lot of that property in there, yeah, by the name of Reefer Furl, him and his people, his crews, and they set up a timbering outfit in there. And they brought oxen in there, and they logged with these oxes and things. And which he had a small dozer and thing there too, but they still used a lot of these oxen. He set his mill right on that creek right up past Thomas Addy's old home place there. And they sold some of the office timber in there. I can remember that. Remember, I was a boy, Tim, back in the 30s there, and they'd bring that down. But now this Northeast Lumber Company is in over here at Miller Creek way back there in the teens there, Tim, right after the turn of the century, right after they settled this in here. I know a lot of them old timers that worked there. And they're still timbering there yet. That there Miller Creek is one heck of a big creek. It's kind of clear cut, man. Now, then one of these days, this Consolidated Coal got a lease on all in there. There'll be a big old mining facility go right in the mouth there. I guess that's one reason that Viaduct getting to come across Miller's Creek here and come on across and destroy that Indian mound there, because that quarter G-119, because there'll be a big mining facility go in there. There'll be a track go up to Miller's Creek. I hate to see the virgin property destroyed, but they got to get their mineral again. But anyway, Tim, that logging there, I can remember as a boy. Just like somebody asked me at school, me and you was at the other day down here at Warfield, Kentucky. They asked me how Groundhog Holler got its name. My dad used to own that holler at one time. He bought it back in the 40s there in 42. And there's an old timber man told me about that, which he, you know, after they left timber and the coal moved into here, they went to mining instead of timbering. You see, there's a little more pay in it. There wasn't much money in that timbering. It's all hard work. And you take your local timber man, only way they get theirs out of here, you see, they didn't have no rail transportation, nothing there to haul it out on, and they couldn't afford the rail transportation. No, but they'd get theirs together there and wait for the spring rise, and they'd bring it down these creeks and things, and they'd raft it together and take it down here to Catlettsburg, Kentucky. So Catlettsburg, Kentucky was your hardwood shipping center of the world. Or there was more wood come into that territory. And in this area here, there was more species of lumber and timber than there are any place in the world, the United States of America or any foreign country, because you've got more species of it. It's like the oak elm. You got any, just anything you mention, you got any of this. See, some states, there's just one variety of timber, just a few varieties, there's several different varieties, but nothing like you are in Kentucky and West Virginia down these mountains. Yeah. They had timber here. I've got some pictures up in these books over here sometime. I'll get it and show you some logs and things they had. It would rally your mind to see a log that big. You wouldn't think a tree grew that big. And which a lot of people don't know it there. I'll take you up there one of these days. Me and you'll go across this right up here on this farm here. There's some trees right up here, which mean they was there back when it was the virgin days, which them trees way over 500 year old now on the desk for them, your people right up here at Borderland, right this side of the old bridge that's blasted down. And them were trees that over 500 year old. Me and Rufus Reed conferred together there. He was a naturalist and a woodsman. And he said, Charlie, you know, I guess about the oldest living thing on Tug River, Rufus. He said, they are, my boy, they are.
And I said, I didn't know until I conferred with you, just asked you what the age of them been. He said, well, I can pretty well tell you the age of it. I'd say you can. And I guess you know what I mean. I know you read the history about it. We had one of the largest oak trees in the world, white oak, over here ahead of Trace Creek in Mango County. I got a picture of it over here in this book, too, over here. And I forget what it was. It was a conference, about 37 foot or something like that. But anyway, they make a monument. See, it's the stump and all rotted out. See, if that tree was there before Columbus even discovered America there. And the history went back on it there. It was the largest oak tree in the world. But anyway, getting back to logging there, and I've seen quite a bit of it go out of here, and I can remember the logging day there in my day. But of course, I'm just a young rascal, what these old timers older than me were. But I kind of got a lot of information from them too, and I read a lot of history on this territory and how they took it out. My dad-in-law, he'd been about 130 or 40 year old now. He'd been living. He was an old logging man back in them days, and he went to coal mining after that. And he rafted lumber out of here into Catlettsburg, and he'd tell me about his experience, so on and so forth, taking it in.
Yeah, I believe I went back and seen those trees before. My father took me back to head of Hurricane Creek, and we couldn't even get our arms around them. There's three of us, and we put our arms, we couldn't get all the way around them.
Well, you know how astonishing that would have been. Now, if you remember back in the days and see them tuck and cut one of them trees there and watch them work that tree up there, you know, where they, and they'd have to work it down then. But them are oxes all stout, and a yoke ox, that's only two big oxes. They could sure pull. But some of them, just like them trees you see there, they'd have split them right before them oxes even pull them that meal there. See, they set their meal up right there.
As far as the alleys, building furniture and musical instruments, what do you know about that?
The alleys, they was talented just about anything that they went at there. I know a lot of the alley families there, and they could, with their hands and their skill and what they had to do with, they could make just about everything that they used there. They was very skillful people. And after a latter year there, as he come through, they educated their family there then, and they, but now in their time there, they was educated for what they had to do there, you know, because you had to do yourself education, no education. But anyway, they made sure the kids got education. Their philosophy is they made teachers and preachers there, O'Malley didn't, and they's awful fine people, and they're well skilled people there, because I had one buddy there, we lived right across from him there a while. That old man Thomas Alley there, and he could make just about anything he used, he could make it there in his blacksmith shop, and they growed all their own stuff, preserved all their own stuff, just like everybody else. And he was a coal miner also, and a good one. And I'd go over to his blacksmith shop whenever I was a boy there, and he'd fascinate me. I'd watch him there, and he'd be making this, or fixing making a horseshoe, or making a piece for his plow, or plow point, or beating something out. And he'd see that I was fascinated with it, and he'd let me turn that forge there for him there while he'd get his metal hot, where he'd work it in to shape it in what he was making there. He said, Charlie, I said, yeah. He said, you want to make something? I said, Tom, I couldn't make nothing. I said, I watched you there. I said, you're awful good at it. He said, well, you can do anything you want to do. He said, you burn coal, don't you? I said, yes. He said, you got to have a poker. I said, yeah. He said, I'll make you a poker. I said, I don't know, I could try. He got a piece of long metal there, and he said, now I'm going to turn that bellow. He said, that bellow is where you get your winter to keep your coal going, or you get her hot, you know, get that heat going, that air goes in. And he said, I'm going to let you heat that thing. He turned the bellows for me, and I got it. He pulled it out there. He said, boy, look how red. I said, yeah, boy. He said, stick it over on that anvil there. I stuck it over. He said, get that hammer there. And I got that hammer. He said, start rolling on the anvil. Just start hitting it with that hammer. Just roll it. I rolled it around and hit it. That thing coming out pretty round as you ever see. They put you a little pawn on that tab. I said, okay. I put a little pawn on him there. And he said, stick it in that barrel there and cool him. That cooling barrel. I'll cool him down. He said, now, Charlie. He said, look what you got out here. Looking like a poker, I said. Either you got to have a handle on it, yes. He said, test it there. He gave me his gloves. He said, make sure it's cool enough. Said, and then put it back in that far. The other end, he said, not the same end. I said, okay, Tom. I put it back in there, and he went to turn them bellows. He pulled it out. I pulled it down, and it was real hot, red. He said, see that there hole there in that anvil, I said. He said, stick it right down about where you want your handle to bend, Ed. He said, and give it a pull there. I stuck it down and I bent him around, that thing come down. He said, take it back out. He said, reach there and get that hammer. I got it. He said, lay it upon your anvil. I laid it up there. He said, beat it down there flat right on to that piece of metal there where you got your bend at. I did. And that thing come down there, as pretty as you ever saw. He said, stick it in that keg or water. I did. Cool it down. He said, now you have got you a poke. I said, hot doggies, ain't that something? I didn't know. He said, see you there. And from then on, he was my hero. But anyway, getting back to, I watched him our Tim, and he could do anything he wanted to do with his hand. And he made his furniture. He made him just.